How would you like a 15% discount to my daily email, the stack of stuff, the show notes, discounts to the conference, all of that? All you need to do is text the word show to 33777. You'll get the annual subscription with a 15% discount to my daily email. You'll get the stack of stuff, the links to the show notes, discounts to the conference, and so much more. All you have to do is text the word show, S-H-O-W, to 33777. Text show to 33777.
Welcome to the Eric Erickson Show podcast, Hour 3.
Greetings, conversationalists. Welcome. It's Eric Erickson here. Across the United States of America, I am delighted to have you with me. The phone number is 877-973-7425. If you want to pick my brain about something, today's your last day to do it for the next week or so. Let me do this right here, and I'll take your phone calls here in a minute. But so tomorrow is the Good Friday show, and I know I've got a whole lot of listeners here this Good Friday who were not here last year. Let me just tell you the genesis of this show, so you understand what you're getting into tomorrow, and why I'm not going to take your phone calls tomorrow. I got some friends who are going to join me. It used to be I would just do the whole 3 hours, and now I'm actually talking to some different folks during the show tomorrow. So when I first started in radio back in 2011, I literally never worked in a company where people worked on Good Friday. I worked at law firms, I worked at a trade think tank in DC, and everybody took off Good Friday, and then in radio we didn't. Which is fine, but I just thought if I'm going to work, I want to do something on Good Friday, and because it is Harvard, Cambridge, Oxford, Yale. You ask a list of historians what are the most important days in human history, and Good Friday is very often ranked number one, is always in the top five. And I feel like, you know, I mean, we should probably spend a little time thinking about higher order topics of on that day and the significance and what it's done to Western civilization. So I did it. And all the bosses weren't happy. So don't do that again. A little bit too much religion on a news talk show. And I do, by the way, understand that. But then people got into the office on Monday morning and everybody had voicemails asking for copies of that show. And so now they make me do a Christmas one too. But it kind of stuck. It's just a great way to not talk about politics for a day while also talking about politics, because looking at things from a different perspective, from a higher perspective. So it's for some people, they do find a little off-putting, and I get that. But my audience would burn down my studio at this point if I didn't do it. It is expected. And I do it, honestly, it's I kind of feel like it's a tithe. So that'll be tomorrow. But I don't take your phone calls. And the reason I don't take phone calls on that day in doing the show is because I did. For 2 years in a row, I took phone calls. And they were some of the most off-the-wall, wild questions that were, is to some degree, deeply uncomfortable questions. Not that I couldn't handle the questions, but I'm thinking for the rest of the listening audience, this is going to be kind of wild. So I don't. Instead, I it's the one time of year I actually interview people. I don't like to do a lot of conversation. I realize we had, for example, Pete Ricketts on the show, Senator Ricketts and Congresswoman Kamik this week. They were both relevant newsmakers to what's going on in the news. But I even don't like to do that a lot. But on this show, I actually spend time talking to two people. So my buddy Andrew Walker, he is one of the professors of ethics at Southern Seminary. He's a longtime friend of mine, talking about the people's interactions with politics and ethics today. We'll talk about that tomorrow. My buddy Dan Darling at Southwestern Baptist Seminary. Got a lot of Baptists tomorrow, fair warning. He's written a book on Easter and the characters of Easter in Scripture. Talk to him about that. Guy Richard is my seminary president. You know, I'm at Reformed Theological Seminary. I got to get back into classes. He is at Reformed Theological Seminary in Marietta, Georgia, just north of Atlanta. I'll talk to him. And then Al Mohler, longtime big fan of Al Mohler, and he's at Southern Seminary. He's the president of Southern Seminary, big in the Southern Baptist Convention. And going to talk to him as well. So they'll be joining me tomorrow. In the past, I've had Tim Keller, Lincoln Duncan, and others. And they're always neat conversations because they're not explicitly theological conversations for Good Friday, but just deeply good conversations. And so just be prepared for that tomorrow. Honestly, the last time I took phone calls, this is what really made me stop taking phone calls on the Good Friday show, is I had a guy call and his marriage was falling apart. And I just thought it, look, I was happy to talk to the guy about it, but I didn't think it was appropriate for me to talk about that on air with you guys. And now Charlie screens calls and has a good sense of what's appropriate or not. And we get so overrun with odd calls like that on Good Friday. It's like, I don't want to, I'm willing to subject myself to like talking to someone who feels like their world is falling apart, but I don't know that that's something that you guys need to eavesdrop on. It just doesn't feel appropriate to me. So that's it. Okay. That being said, next week I'm on spring break with my kids and I'm going to completely go off on a wild hair right now that I shouldn't. And I am. So I can get it out of my head because I have no impulse control on these things. I've said this before and I need to say it again. Y'all, it's wild to me that I have a senior in high school. It is just, it's weird to me that I have a senior in high school who's going to college. How am I this old? But more than this, and this relates into Holy Week and Good Friday. My wife 7 years ago was given 2 years to live and she did not think she would be here for this. If you're a longtime listener, you know, and if you're new, you probably don't know, my wife has stage 4 lung cancer. And it is not a curable form of lung cancer. It is genetic, and there's no getting around it. So she takes a pill called Tagrisso. And this pill, so my wife's tumors form because her body produces, as I understand it, and I say as I understand it because I may be getting some of the details wrong, but my wife's body produces a protein her body should not produce. And the way her body processes the protein is to develop tumors that consume the protein, that grow the tumors that are therefore malignant, that begin to spread through the body, and they start in the lungs. So she takes this pill, and this pill keeps the protein from growing, and the pill works for 2 years. 7 years ago, she started taking this pill. Now, we have since discovered that she has some wild genetic mutation. And that genetic mutation, the people who have her genetic mutation, they're to, if I remember the numbers, like 37 or 38 known people with that same mutation who have this cancer. And this pill continues to work. And we don't know how long it works. And the problem is that I think if I understand right, and again, there's some of the things that I don't understand, and I've got to fill in the blanks here, but I'm pretty sure my wife's the last one standing at this point. And it's not that the others, the pills stopped working, but they all died during COVID. You got stage 4 lung cancer and you get COVID. It's not good. My wife, thankfully, has had COVID now a couple of times. It's wiped her out, but she's recovered. But she's the last one standing as far as I know, if my understanding is correct. And so we don't know how long this pill is going to work. But we were told it would be 2 years, and that was 7 years ago. My wife, when she was in first grade, her mother died of breast cancer. And she felt like she was getting this death sentence 7 years ago and that her child would end up like her without her mom at her high school graduation. Now, my wife's dad remarried. My mother-in-law is one of the greatest human beings on planet Earth. In fact, the first year Christy and I were married, my Mother's Day gift to my mother-in-law was to have her adopt my wife, and I handled the adoption. It was one of the few adoptions I did as a lawyer, was having my wife be adopted by her mom. And we're taking them to the beach with us next week. I am very blessed. I love my parents and I love my in-laws. I have great, y'all, my in-laws are just wonderful people. And, but it was still kind of an emotionally impactful thing for my wife that she was not going to live for her oldest daughter's high school graduation and be in her position. And here we are, y'all, we're now 2 months from graduation, less than 2 months from graduation. And my wife is still around. And you know what this means, of course, is that we've had to do all the extra stuff this year. We got to build the memories. We got to do all the memory making. It's one reason, like, I want to have flexibility to travel more. And with this show, you know, I can take my equipment with me and do stuff and build memories. But the downside is that my wife gets these very weird side effects. Like, she has had for the last 24 hours this awful round of just stomach problems. And it comes in waves. And part of it, I think, is the stress as well of packing up to go on vacation, all that. But it's kind of wild. But at the same time, 7 years ago, we really didn't think she was going to be here. And we would love it if the good Lord blesses us that she'll still be here when our 15-year-old gets out of high school. But we have this sword of Damocles that hangs over us. And every 3 months, my wife goes for a scan to make sure that the horsehair hasn't snapped and the sword isn't falling, that her tumors aren't growing, and we can't get rid of the tumors. And, you know, I've had people, by the way, reach out and say, well, why don't you just do a lung transplant? Well, the problem is that because this cancer is genetic, the tumors would come back. As her cells begin to reproduce in the lungs and her cells take over the cells of the person whose lungs they originally were, well, then her cells would populate with the mutation. I realize, you know, this is wild, offbeat stuff, but filling in on all this, and it's also – it goes towards Good Friday. But this is why this spring break is meaningful to me. Last spring break, we were expecting President Trump's indictment from Alvin Bragg in New York. And I had to take all my radio equipment with me to the beach just in case I needed to work. I'm not taking anything this year. I intend to enjoy my family and this vacation before we send our child off to college. And I am so excited to have my whole family here, my wife especially, for us to be able to do that. So you'll forgive me not being here next week. Please don't send me emails asking where the podcast is, because it ain't happening. But I'll be here tomorrow with you guys for Good Friday. I might as well. Craig's been waiting patiently. Craig, let me take your call. I'll shut up here and let you talk. Welcome. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. What's going on?
My comment seems kind of meaningless.
I'm sorry. Such a bad host. I shouldn't put you in this position, but I'm going to spare myself from rambling on and being mopey. So welcome to the show. Don't worry about it. You ask your question.
Well, you have my prayers, you and your wife.
Thank you.
Well, as we all know all too well, Trump filed a bunch of legal challenges in 2020. I mean, they were all dismissed, but he filed legal challenges. He didn't, like, actually send armed troops into state capitals to change the vote. And for the last 3 to 4 years, the left has been wringing their hands and breathlessly telling us that to legally challenge the results of election is tantamount to treason and beyond the pale and worthy of criminal charges. But I was reading an article on Red State a few days ago that it's come out that the last couple of years, the Biden administration has been setting the plans to file legal challenges in case Trump wins a close 2024 mm-hmm. election. And it's just like, I mean, the hypocrisy there is like mind-boggling. I mean, is Fannie Willis going to charge Biden with RICO things if he challenges Georgia?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So I'm glad you bring up this topic, because, you know, that they say that Trump's a threat to democracy and we got to defend democracy. So what the Democrats are doing right now is they filed lawsuits in every state where Robert Kennedy has gotten on the ballot or where No Labels looks like they could get on the ballot. And they're trying to shut down third party candidates from appearing on the ballot, because, you know, it's all about, we got to stop democracy to save democracy. And yes, they're going to do this. Now, I will tell you, I used to be a lawyer for president, for a presidential campaign. Now, I was only volunteer. That it sounds way more impressive than it actually was. I was never paid for anything. But when George Bush ran for president the second time, I was a volunteer lawyer on the legal team. And it is kind of campaign malpractice if you don't have your lawsuits ready to go, because there are problems in every election. No election is without problems, because elections are run by people and people are stupid and they make mistakes. So you prepare your lawsuits well in advance, and you get everything ready to go. And it, when you see a problem, you flip the switch, you adjust your complaint to meet the facts at hand, and you rush to the nearest federal courthouse and you file it. So, yeah, the Biden team has these prepared. The Trump team better have them prepared as well. You know, so I tell you that 2020, it wasn't stolen, like the machines weren't rigged and all this stuff. It was stolen fair and square. And what I mean when I say that is the Democrats outmaneuver the Republicans in court. The Democrats had their legal team up to snuff, and the Republicans, Trump had actually made so many enemies among lawyers on the right that they wouldn't help him. Like the biggest and the best legal minds on the GOP side, they just didn't want to help him. And he essentially had to go out and hire DUI lawyers to be election lawyers. Election law is a very niche, however you say it, law. I was an election lawyer. It is very, very, very niche. And you got to find good lawyers. A DUI lawyer becoming one isn't going to muster snuff. And that's what happened in 2020 is Republicans got outmaneuvered in courtrooms around the country. And that's how the Democrats were able to take the election. They got the rules changed, which it's kind of standard election law 101. You don't change the rules in the middle of the game. And the Democrats were able to. They took advantage of COVID. And the Republicans didn't make the good arguments in court. And that's how we got what we had. It wasn't actually machines switching votes. You know, if you're on the phones, be patient with me. It's a short segment here. Ran long last segment. 877-973-7425. Interesting juxtaposition. My boss texted me and said, you got to see this. I pulled up the video. Trump or Obama and Biden walking together does not make Joe Biden look like a fit, healthy person compared to Barack Obama. Joe Biden is, forget the dementia and all of that, he is showing his age. He really is. And I mean, look, he's the president of the United States. I had somebody the other day, I said, you know, you gotta, the Bible says, pray for the president, whether you like him or not. And say, it's not my president, not my, no, actually, he is your president. Whether you like it or not, that's the way it works. There's only one president of the United States at a time, whether you like it or not, he is your president. And he is too old to be president of the United States. And it's remarkable that our choices are what they are, but, he is just, and you see it distinctly, even with Bill Clinton, who's still younger than Biden. Clinton, as old as he is still younger than Biden. It is remarkable. Wow. Wow, that's what Democrats went with. All right, your calls on the other side. We still got to talk about this protest at Vandy. It's just too good not to, including the tampon issue. Oh, my gosh. First, I got to tell you about Americans for Prosperity. They bought Bidenomics.com. I told you Biden the other day mentioned Bidenomics favorably again. The Democrats have been telling him, shut up, man. Stop talking about Bidenomics. People don't like it. But he was bragging about it again the other day. Well, if you go to Bidenomics.com, you can see Joe Biden's record, how bad it actually is, what his words are and what the actual record is. And it's objective. You're like, oh, AFP, they're conservatives. How is that objective? Because they got the actual data, and the actual data speaks volumes for how bad Joe Biden's record is. He claims he cut the deficit and the debt. It went up. He claims he reduced the cost of groceries. They went up. He claims he reduced the cost of gas. It went up. It's not good. It's all available at Bidenomics.com. You can share it with your friends and family. Easy to understand, easy to navigate, easy to share, easy to see just how bad the Biden economic record is, exactly why it's costing him the election. Go to Bidenomics.com today. Brought to you by the folks at Americans for Prosperity who had the foresight to buy that domain. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here, and I have a caller who's been waiting patiently, JC, who does not know that he's about to help me make a brilliant point, but I see what he's talking about, and it is actually pretty relevant to the subject I've been waiting all day to get to, and I should have gotten to earlier, but today I am completely undisciplined. I'm a professional, and some days you'd never know it. JC, you're going to help me look brilliant. Welcome. How are you?
Yeah, afternoon, Eric. How are you? Happy early Easter holiday to you and all the listeners and the family and everything. I got to piggyback off of your opening and monologue, sir. Good for Trump meeting with the widow of the slain officer, yes, who shouldn't have been slain. But it's funny. Tomorrow is 1 week. You had a deadly subway shooting in Brooklyn. And then I think it was yesterday or the day before, a man with mental issues timed the incoming subway train and threw somebody in front of it and killed him. And Eric Adams is trying to break it down and explain it. But Governor Hochul, you had the National Guard in the subway. What happened to that?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then the other one, and this is a subject, I know it's going to set you off like it sets me off, but that disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan. And the thing that gets me, I like to make comparisons, but it almost reminds me of Benghazi. If I remember, our military intelligence identified and was tracking a suicide bomber, and I'm sure you would agree with me, had that suicide bomber been neutralized before he got to Abigail, we wouldn't have dead or dead brave men and women and hundreds injured and killed. And it's like, it's almost like intentional, Eric. I'm like, if the soldier couldn't have just defied orders, just took the person out, they probably would risk their military career, but it would have saved lives. So I'm hot.
Well, look, and you have every right to be because of the disrespect of the progressive left towards our military and towards the police. You're absolutely right. And for those of you who weren't here at the beginning of the show, Donald Trump is at the wake for the officer who was killed in New York by a man who had been arrested 21 times and kept being let out, while Joe Biden is at a fancy fundraiser in Manhattan. It is an interesting juxtaposition. Now, JC, the point where you make me look brilliant here is this is a tie-in to what I was going to talk about, and it comes actually in the form of white kids at Vanderbilt University. Because there is a disdain on the left for the military and law enforcement, and it came to a head at Vanderbilt. You may not have heard about this story, but it really is a remarkable story. At Vanderbilt University, the chancellor's office is located in Kirkland Hall, and a group of overwhelmingly white kids decided to stage a hunger strike and take over the building and do a sit-in because the college administration shut down a student government vote over whether or not the university should divest from Israel, BDS, boycott, divest, sanction Israel. And the university shut it down. They weren't going to play towards the anti-Semites, and so the overwhelmingly white progressive kids stormed into the chancellor's office, sat down on the floor, and refused to leave. And this is the remarkable aspect of it. I can't play you the video because it would be one steady beep, puppet beep, puppet beep. The white kids. Now, there were Asian kids, there were Hispanic kids, there were black kids. It was overwhelmingly pretty boy white kids locking arms with each other, refusing to leave, some of them in COVID masks, of course. And the majority of the police officers were black. And the white kids were calling the police officers puppets and slamming them for standing on the side of the oppressor. And how could you black police officers betray your race? By the way, Vanderbilt University administrators brought in Panera Bread for the police officers who did not share it with the students doing their sit-in, and the students accused them of human rights abuses. What a bunch of pampered, sniveling little brats. Now, the punchline of all of this is that one of the girls who was there had a tampon in, and it had been there for several hours. And the students began to freak out that this girl was going to go into toxic shock syndrome if she could not replace it. And they called 911 demanding medical assistance, and they really thought that could help them. And the university said if the girl would leave, she wasn't going to be arrested. If she wanted to leave, she wasn't going to be arrested. But she didn't want to leave because they wouldn't commit to no discipline at all against the girl. And the university, we're not saying that. We're saying if she gets up and she leaves right now, she's not going to be arrested. But because they wouldn't agree not to suspend her or to arrest her at a later date, she refused to leave. So they called 911 and really did believe that 911 was going to help them. And the 911 people were like, you don't need an ambulance for this. She can go change her tampon. And they were furious with the authorities for not helping them. They berated the police officers who were there. Now, to their credit, to the credit of these kids at Vanderbilt, they were there for 21 and a half hours, unlike the Harvard sit-in that lasted 12 hours, and that was it. So this is the Free Press has some of this, and it's actually kind of funny. During one of the 21 and a half hours of the protest, probably at an ungodly one, a few student demonstrators called 911 because of this tampon issue. She was being denied the right to change her tampon that had been in for multiple hours, which led to an increased risk of toxic shock, according to one of them. That's what they said. The 911 operator asked, "Do you have an emergency? You're telling me your friend at Kirkland needs an ambulance? Is that what you're telling me?" Well, that didn't pass muster. The friends began chanting what will happen to her friend should she leave the sit-in, and the adults explained she wouldn't be arrested if she left. But they couldn't confirm she would never be arrested, and someone began yelling that she does not feel safe. "You idiots are the ones who took over the chancellor's office." What a bunch of white privilege on display by these kids. So here's the take from the Free Press. "It's all very Karen, to borrow a trope from 2020, especially when a protester demands the administrator find someone who can get them some answers, just like middle-aged women who think dressing down the manager will somehow earn them a full refund. These students convince themselves that by linking arms and screaming shame at their college's chancellor, they would somehow stop a war in the Middle East. Don't these authority figures realize they're standing in the way of the global intifada? We find out in a subsequent video that the tampon was removed, though not in any bathroom. It came out at the sit-in. She took it out there. Many of the kids were using plastic bottles to pee in. The woman on a microphone calls it the most depraved blankety-blank I've seen in my entire life." Yes, except these kids really thought they could go stage a sit-in at the chancellor's office at Vandy and that they would have all of their privileges afforded to them, that they would be able to get up and go to the restroom and come back, that they would be able to go eat, that they would be provided food by the university during their sit-in. No. When Martin Luther King, when black civil rights activists decided to stage sit-ins, they were not asking the white people to bring them food. Can you imagine? Just mind blown here. These white kids, can you imagine if they were protesting with Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King and the black civil rights activists of the 1960s? "Hey, we're here with them, but we're going to go leave and use the bathroom, and we just want to make sure we can come back and sit with the black people. We realize they can't go because there's no bathroom for them since they're black, but there is for us. We want to leave and come back." I mean, just think about your school field trips right now. The white kids who go on school trips want to sit in the back of the bus. It's where everybody wants to sit these days. The level of asininity, of the arrogance and privilege of these kids of, "Hey, we think we should be able to take over this property, but y'all should allow us to come and go as we please in case we're hungry or need to use the bathroom." No, if you're that committed to it, you stay there. And the fact that they didn't, it was all for performance. They stayed 21 and a half hours. They should still be there right now starving to death if they really cared about it. But white privilege doesn't much care about anything other than white privilege. And it's a white privilege to engage in performance art, claiming that you care about some issue you really don't even care about. And the reality is half these kids probably couldn't even pick out Israel on a map because it doesn't say Palestine on the map. What a bunch of blithering idiots. And by the way, I got a lot of criticism of Vanderbilt these days. Vanderbilt has drifted to the left. You know, for example, Vanderbilt is a university that decided that religious groups on campus couldn't be recognized on campus unless they allowed people not of the religious groups to be in leadership positions. So you had a Christian group that had to allow an atheist, gay rights supporting atheist, to be in charge of the Christian group, or else they couldn't be on campus. And the Christian group packed up and left campus. And the Muslim group had to allow a Southern Baptist to vie for leadership. This is idiocy at Vanderbilt. An institution that was founded by a Christian denomination, and the Vanderbilt family, what Cornelius Vanderbilt ponied up the money for it, and they've gotten very hostile to conservatives on that campus, and yet God bless the chancellor for standing up to this idiocy. Maybe the privileged elite idiocy of some of these white kids and the way they abuse black police officers on a college campus, maybe some of these universities and colleges are starting to realize things have gone too far. Look at Stanford University. So the Atlantic published a piece on the happenings at Stanford. That university has gone overboard in anti-Semitism. And in fact, the Atlantic published how one guy there was calling for the assassination of President Biden and saying the country wasn't going to change its pro-Israel position unless Joe Biden ate a bullet, things like that. And the left is like, how dare you publish the private statements of a college student to destroy his life? These weren't private statements he was making. They were public statements, and the left is pouncing on the Atlantic for exposing this kid who wants to assassinate the president of the United States because of Israel. And the documentation of the Atlantic, I mean, the Atlantic has fueled the wokeness in this country. Look what they did to Kevin Williams and firing him. That they've emboldened these people. They've enabled these people. And even the Atlantic's like, y'all, I think this has gone too far. The anti-Semites at Stanford are literally chasing Jews off campus. Literally chasing Jews off campus. Harassing Jews and conservatives and others at Stanford. It's amazing. You know, Condoleezza Rice is in charge of the Hoover Institute there. They need to make her the president of Stanford and just purge the progressives within. She'd make a great university president. It's remarkable what's happening on these college campuses. So good for the administration at Vanderbilt for standing up to these idiots and forcing them to sit there and starve if they wanted to actually sit there and starve. It's what they said they wanted to do till they got there and started doing it, and Vanderbilt made them either sit there and shut up or go, and then arrested some of them and has suspended a large number of them. Good for Vanderbilt for suspending these kids. They deserve it. Should have expelled them, though. Now, I got to tell you about a great conservative institute, the Old Glory Bank. It's my bank. I've had a bank account there since they opened last year, and I don't have fees on my checking or savings account, and my kids don't either, and you won't either. All you do is go to oldglorybank.com, and you can sign up today. So a group of conservatives bought a bank in Oklahoma. There were several side projects of people trying to start conservative banks. Some of them tried to start from scratch, and they all fell through. Investors lost money. Well, the smart ones, they bought a bank. John Rich, Larry Elder, and others went in together and with some guys who know banking. They bought a bank in Oklahoma. They rebranded it Old Glory Bank, and they made it available for anybody in the nation to use. And here's what sets them apart. They don't track your transactions and give that information to the feds. They don't prohibit you from doing business with companies you want to do business with. Even if the folks at Old Glory don't care for the business, they're not going to block you. They're not going to turn off your bank account because of who you are. Old Glory Bank has a banking bill of rights. You can see it at oldglorybank.com. But also, honestly, I'm not using them for that. I'm using them because I respect them as conservatives who have good business sense. And I wanted to do business with a conservative institution like Old Glory, but I love them because no fee checking, no fee savings, great online bill pay. I mean, they're a real bank, y'all. OldGloryBank.com. You can get an account set up in less than 8 minutes. And then you've got over 85,000 retail locations like your kids, like my kids. They do odd jobs. They get paid in cash. They get a 20. They want to put it in their bank account. Well, they can go to 85,000 retail locations in this country and provide their checking account information, and it'll get deposited into their account. And it really does work. We've done it. It works great. OldGloryBank.com. OldGloryBank.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Terms and conditions apply. Welcome back. Eric Erickson here across the nation. This is the wildest story, legal story, that I've read in quite a while. In Wisconsin, there's been a progressive takeover of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. It's gotten very, very progressive. And frankly, honestly, Republicans advanced a candidate who had lost an election before and decided to do it again, and he wasn't a great candidate. Progressives were able to take over. Candidate quality matters. Well, the Wisconsin Supreme Court has ruled that Catholic Charities is not a religious nonprofit. There is a state insurance program, and religious institutions do not have to pay in to the state insurance program, and the Catholic Charities have been ordered to start paying into the program because they're now considered secular. Why are they considered secular? Well, the state's unemployment system says that if an organization is, quote, operated primarily for religious purposes, it is exempt from paying into the state unemployment system. A lot of states have this exemption. But Wisconsin said that because Catholic Charities does things like feed the poor, that it's not a religious charity because secular nonprofits also feed the poor, and that the religious motivations can be separated from the charitable activities. And the court said, quote, activities are that are secular in nature are secular. So even though there is a religious purpose to feeding the poor because it is a secular purpose as well, it can't actually be considered a religious nonprofit. Is that not wild? According to the majority of Wisconsin judges, the only religious activities that can qualify for the exemption are corporate worship, counseling, education, and activities such as baptism, marriage, burial, and the like. Those, the court said, are hallmarks of religious purposes, unlike serving the poor, which can be provided by organizations of either religious or secular motivations. That, y'all, that's this is a lawsuit. There's going to be a federal lawsuit here. This is bizarre. You know, Christ himself, God Almighty himself, said to take care of the widows, the orphans, and the poor. It's kind of like quintessentially religious obligations. It's why Catholic Charities were started, among other things. Now in Wisconsin, they're saying, that's not actually religious. The non-religious, they take care of the poor, widows, the poor, and the orphans as well. So you can't, telling a religion that its activities are not religious is quite a statement from the progressives at the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and it's what they've done. Wild. Obviously, there's going to be a federal appeal of this because this really can't stand. It's anathema to this nation's First Amendment to hold this up. Okay. Tomorrow, the Good Friday Show, I will be here with you. I really do hope you'll tune in if you're new to the program. It's not quite what you normally get in conservative talk radio, but I hope you'll enjoy the show. I will talk to you guys then.